Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
You know, obviously there is a natural thing of like, we need to keep the game going and so on. But the first thing is like, provide the bloody games. Provide the opportunity for kids to play.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
Very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the Koigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to look at all the action that has happened in the world of football over the last couple of days since we last recorded last week with Scarlett Heron, where we had some very interesting chats about Manchester City in particular and their ability to go on a Chelsea-esque run over the next couple of seasons. But of course, good old Arsenal, we're waiting there to put them slightly back in their box. I won't go as far to say that they actually pulled a number over them. I think they were quite fortunate in some parts of the game in terms of how it ended up going, but it does slightly stop Manchester City's canter to the title for the time being. Joining me to look at that and all the other action over the weekend, plus a couple of interesting managerial moves, is Karen Duggan. Karen, how are things?
Things are good, Kathleen. I missed you last week.
I know, we were very sad not to have you on the podcast, but you're busy doing important things, so we let you off.
Just this one time.
I mean, now that you don't have training as an excuse anymore, you know, you kind of need to get a bit more creative with these things.
I'm struggling. It's going to get worse now when people expect me to turn up to social events. Like that Thursday training session, I haven't been to a work do in ever.
Well, I will. Hopefully you won't be forced into too many things over the next couple of months, and you do have the excuse of just being like, oh, I'm getting older these days, feeling a bit more tired.
Yeah, that's not untrue. So
or do what every other sports person does when they retire and go into consultancy and just have some consulting things that you need to do of a Thursday evening, you know.
Yeah, consultancy is a catch-all word for
Okay, we will turn our attention to the football, and we will start with that Arsenal-Manchester City game, just because it probably was, well, actually there was quite a few interesting games down the bottom half of the table as well, but I suppose this one was very unexpected considering the result that Chelsea had against City the previous weekend, and the fact that Arsenal until the last couple of weeks actually haven't had all that much success against the top teams. It was, as I said in the intro there, Karen, it was a good win. I think like Arsenal tactically played a lot of it right, but also I do think they were fortunate in places not to concede. Obviously, there was the meet-em-out one that did actually go in. There was a couple of other chances where City probably should have had a bit more luck. But all in all, the scoreline is the only thing that matters at the end, and it's 1-0 to the Arsenal.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like tactically, they got it right. Sleggers mentioned it after the match. The press in the first half was really strong. They kind of lured City in a little bit, and I think the goal was kind of showed that, you know, the Caldente slip ball through. They had just a little 1-2 around midfield, and it kind of opened the whole game up. And then Smith, obviously in a foot race against anyone, is going to be the favourite, and she made no mistakes. Yes, City had chances. Were they as good as they have been in recent weeks? No, it was a little bit flat. Obviously, their quality brought them through and got them chances, but they're really, on both ends, there really weren't a huge amount of saves that needed to be made. So I think Arsenal can take a lot from that. And sometimes a result like this will bring... I don't think it'll affect City negatively. If anything, I think they'll take some stuff from this performance to work on. And if they get stronger and stronger, you know, they obviously are, it's going to be hard to catch them. But there were some very good performances from Arsenal as well. Like they're very front-footed. The likes of Ford and Russo were really front-footed. So that was good to see. And Kim Little, again, in these kind of games, she just seems to turn back time.
Yeah, I think her performance in particular was interesting. I mean, there was that great moment. I think Leah Williamson reposted it on her Instagram story of Kim Little like absolutely bombing it back to midfield, perfectly taking the ball off the City player and then scooting back up into towards the goal. And it was just the control she had, the pace she had. And I think in a week where there has been some talk about, and maybe a couple of weeks over the January transfer window, where there's been some talk about moving some players on from Arsenal and what
Yeah, what do you
stage.
think of all of that?
I'm
Think it's
not
true?
wholly convinced by it, to be perfectly honest. Like, obviously, for a long time, there's been kind of some talk around Arsenal and that it can be like quite a cliquey group and that they've all been together for so long, and sometimes that can be difficult for coaches and for players coming into. But again, all that sort of stuff has only ever been rumors. And I think some of the players that they're seemingly getting rid of because of age or not putting out to pasture, because I think that's probably unfair on the players, but it does feel a little bit like that. And I'm like, I think these players are still at a fairly high standard. Now, Kim Little obviously has
She
been
is,
going for a
yeah.
long time, and you would understand it a little bit more. But I was chatting to Scarlett about this last week. Like, some of the talk around McCabe doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Like, yes, if you want to change up and bring in new players, that's fine. But I definitely don't see her as the sort of player who's ready to be put out to pasture in that squad just yet. And like, if she
I'd
wants
be
it.
very wary of another WSL team coming in.
Definitely.
For a McCabe, I think she still has a lot of years left in her now. If she wants the challenge, maybe of the NWSL, you'd understand that. And if it was going to be her choice, but if it's this narrative around bringing young players in, you can do that on a phased basis. It doesn't need to be a big bang. I mean, they brought Olivia Smith in, they paid big money for it. Why not do it because they probably do have the resources? Do it in that way where it's one or two as opposed to, oh, this person's old, and just have that kind of, I don't know, I guess that chat around it. I think they should try and dispel that as soon as they can, because like it'll be like when they Miedema left and went to City. And to be fair, the Arsenal fans were rightly a bit miffed by it because she has come back into form. And yeah, she didn't get a goal yesterday because Arsenal, like, they swarmed her a little bit, but she had some really bright moments. I mean, she had a chance after 15 seconds that could have changed the whole complexion of the game. So she was still in her prime. And I don't know, forward just in this match as well, she kind of looked like she was really bright. And that partnership that they have on the field with McCabe down the left, like, it was all, I don't know, it seemed, maybe it was a statement by them, or maybe it's just the fact that they are still that good.
It did. I think it could be a bit of a mixture of both. Like, it did definitely feel from the likes of McCabe and Little a little bit of a an FU to the club, because from all the reports, especially on the McCabe side, it seems that the talks are quite amicable between both of them. And as you said, maybe it is just the thing that
A
she
new
wants to
challenge, maybe she'll be there
try
for
the
10 years.
NWSL, or even like
I'd
Scarlett was
respect that, to
suggesting
be fair.
Barcelona last week as well as maybe a
Yeah.
potential place for her to go and experience La Liga if she wanted that experience. So, but it definitely did feel like they were standing up a little bit and saying, "Look, here, we're not gone yet." And I do think
Yeah.
it is the narrative to be that this is an aging squad that needs an overhaul that there has been is a bit strange to me from a team that's just won the Champions League. That is still, I know they're like far off City, but everyone is far off City in terms of points
Yeah.
this season. It's, yes, tweaks are potentially needed in certain positions, and if they do bring in, Onabagie, then maybe that does change up the squad. But also, Arsenal have fallen foul before of leaving themselves with not enough depth to actually compete properly, and a few injuries have sent them like spiraling fairly quickly. So that's what I would also be a little bit concerned about. But yeah, I mean, yesterday is exactly the sort of performance that you want to see from a team. It doesn't have to be pretty, but it gets the job done.
But look, if Katie wants to go somewhere, I do respect it as well. Like, it's probably, you want to go while you are in your prime and you can get a big move and you can earn the money and you can get profile somewhere else and spread your brand and stuff like that. So I think from her perspective, it could actually be a clever time to move, but only if she's going to a place that's competing at the highest level, because she is still at that level.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know where she goes in the WSL that she gets that sort of competitive minutes.
At the highest level. Yeah, Europe would be obviously a great challenge. I think obviously France or Spain, you're looking at the top teams there.
Like in my head, those would be the only places I could see her. And that's not even just about ability. It's more about, the
The
teams that are
challenge.
in the WSL and the players that they already have and, just
Yeah,
actually finding that
realistically, you're
space.
looking at City and they don't need a left back. So that other than that, I don't see anywhere else that would suit
It
her.
also
And
would, I said this last week, but it also would be so bizarre to see her in another WSL jersey. I think
bonkers.
I could get my head around another club around the world, but
Champions League
WSL
club, yeah.
would be very, very strange. You were saying there that you don't think, this is going to derail City too much over the next couple of weeks in terms of the title running. Obviously, they're still at the top, still 8 points ahead of Manchester United. Arsenal do have a game in hand against Leicester. That was the game that was postponed after they were competing in the Champions Cup. But City only have, in terms of top teams, left to play United. So even at that, you wouldn't expect them
No,
to.
and that's what I mean. It's that all the big hitters are out of the way, and the next game, no disrespect to Leicester, should be a settler for Man City. They're at home to Leicester. Leicester are bottom of the table now, so then they have that. Then they've got a cup game, grand, they can rotate their squad, and then it's Villa, who are just really struggling at the moment as well. So they get those 6 points, you go into that Spurs and United couple of games with confidence, and they are better than those two teams as well. So it's just a matter of getting back on course for them, and I think that the next couple of fixtures should allow for that. Obviously never say never, but they've been too good this year, you'd imagine, to slip up at this point.
Yeah, you would think so, and it would be probably one of the greatest crashes we'd ever seen if they did manage to lose it at this stage, especially considering, this is their first loss since I think like the opening weekend. They've been
Yeah, I
on
mean,
a
Jaeger has had two losses in total. Like he, I don't think he'll panic, but I'd say he hates losing as well.
Oh, definitely. You could tell it by his comments post-match and even all the players. And I think especially coming off the high of such a good win against Chelsea, that was a it was an utter demolition, and by no means did Arsenal demolish City, but it was clever and it was
Oh,
thoughtful
if
and it
City
hit
win
them.
that game, I think they're showboating for the rest of the league. This will kind of keep them a little bit on track, but they were still good in this game. There was very little between them possession wise. Arsenal did have more shots and I think were a bit sparkier in attack, but there's not much between the teams. You just have to commend Man City's consistency up to this point. That this, not that this game doesn't matter, but it's recoverable.
Yeah, definitely. It's not like it's made a massive change to the title race. It's just put maybe a spark of interest
Yeah.
into it for the next couple of
Now
weeks.
the interest is in the other areas. It's the Champions League and the relegation battle now, which has flipped again. And every comment we make seems to bite us in the bum. I was saying Everton are getting dragged into it. I disappear for a week, and all of a sudden they're flying it.
Well, in fairness, with the way the league is set up, it does just take one win and a couple of other teams also to make a difference. When I saw the news that Brian Sorensen had been sacked, I was genuinely surprised. I
Me too.
know Liverpool or Everton haven't had the easiest of rides this season in the same way that Liverpool haven't, but it just seemed like a really, really strange moment in time to get rid of your managerial team. And all the talk out of that game at the weekend was obviously great for Everton to get the win, first back-to-back ones in nearly 2 years. But all the talk was about Courtney and the saves that she pulled off and how she once again dragged them through. There wasn't any tactical masterclass that Sorensen being gone suddenly changed, or the
No, and
players
I
on the
have,
pitch
yeah.
didn't suddenly look lighter and brighter
The
because
other I guess, talking point or bright spark for Everton was Gabore. And that, again, obviously that signing has nothing to do with the setup or the management. You know, that was done beforehand. Obviously she was the goal scorer and she was really bright and made a difference in bringing her in from the Spanish league. You know, it's just brings something different to Everton in attack. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it was another day where their goalkeeper is player of the match, and we don't know what the plan is for Everton, I guess, but there's what can we say it? They're safe? Are they safe?
Kinda, yeah. I think
Yeah.
they definitely feel a
Sorry to
lot.
say, because I was putting them in the relegation battle 2 weeks ago and now.
Yeah. But yeah. So if you look at the bottom of the table after the weekend's fixtures, Leicester are bottom on 9, Liverpool have 10 points, West Ham have 11, and Everton have 14. But I did run through these fixtures the other week in terms of what those four teams all have coming up, and they all have to play each other
Each other,
a
yeah.
couple of times more. So I do think while 5 points is a decent enough coverage,
When they play each other, if
yeah.
one wins, then it changes the whole complexion of it. Yeah, it's the thing that's like the most exciting about the league at the moment, because we were all, oh, it's a Liverpool West Ham shootout for bottom of the table, and then one gets a win finally after all that, and then the other one just matches it.
Yeah,
They're
exactly.
really tit for tat at the moment.
Yeah, and the fact that they can't, you know, none of them can really pull together an actual run of form. You would say, out of all of them, Liverpool's run of form is arguably the best as of late, with two draws, two wins, and a loss in their last five games. Not in order, but just like that's kind of how they've gone. Leicester seem to be on a bit of a downward spiral. Villa, like four losses in their last five, one win. Anything could happen there. I know they kind of do have a bit more of a cushion in the 7 points, but you know, a couple of losses and you're in
They
trouble.
do, and they're not playing well. They do look vulnerable. Like you expect them to, I don't know, put up a better battle. I know that their away form has been dreadful, like all season, and that's obviously I don't really fully ever understand the home and away form. I guess being at home, there's a comfort and knowing the pitch and stuff like that. But in terms of how you approach games, or becoming known as a team that's terrible away from home, it's a strange one. But I guess definitely credit to Liverpool. And I found it interesting listening to Taylor after the game, because obviously they went ahead, but he was saying how much he hated the second half because they started going long. So from the start, Taylor has obviously been trying to employ a style of play and wanted to bring them on this like coaching journey. They just didn't have the players. The mindset was probably, they were probably all in a difficult place to be taking in that level of information. And now that they're out of the weeds a little bit and he's had more time with them, he obviously is demanding a style of play. And they were very, very good at doing that till they went two up, and then obviously, you know, they're so desperate for points that you wouldn't judge them for starting to go long and stuff like that. But I just thought it was interesting the standards that he's looking to employ at the team who is second from bottom on the table.
Yeah, and I think so. I go back and forth in this, in that I obviously have had my criticisms of Gareth Taylor, both when he was at City and was very surprised whenever Liverpool took him on. But then, you know, the squad was so small before Christmas and the January transfer window. They did actually bring in good players, and they did look like they were kind of making a bit of a go out of it. And like, I'm still not fully on the Gareth Taylor train, so I'm not sure how City have turned themselves around to where they were last season to where they are this season, with there being only like one really outstanding big change. Like, yes, there was some good signings there, but I don't think that was fully
Yeah,
the
not
reason
huge
why.
amounts. Yeah, the squad was
It was pretty much
settled.
formed,
Yeah.
yeah. But it is nice to see Liverpool kind of getting back into a bit of a run of form. Obviously, from an Irish perspective, we don't want Everton or Liverpool to go down so
No.
that we keep more Irish players in the WSL. But even just seeing them having a not just a victory, but an actual proper comprehensive 4-1 annihilation, I can imagine is only good for their general sense of confidence in the team and looking at it, being like, okay, we can actually go on a bit of a run now.
Yeah, because you're always like, God, they were struggling for goals and stuff like that, and then you get four and it's four different goal scorers and a sub coming on, Chilaw coming on, Thomas, who's on loan from Spurs, like, again, new energy and stuff like that. It'll be good for them. Like I say, the only problem for them is that West Ham are matching them again. Couldn't buy a goal in previous games. Martinez at the start of the year, we were like, where is she gone? And then all of a sudden, she's back.
Yeah, this game was actually quite a fun one to watch because we had Brighton who were very comfortable in the driving seat and
On the score sheet.
on the score sheet. Yes, that's fair. On the score sheet, they were kind of it. They were things were going well for them, but also West Ham looked like the better side for large portions of the game. I don't know if you saw Fionn Morgan had a video up. I think the WSL had also posted it. Very much her running away after scoring, being like, that was 100% a cross. I was
Oh yeah, no, fair
not.
enough, but like when you're in a relegation battle and something like that happens,
Oh,
you just
yeah, totally. I just love the
gauge
fact that
it.
she did actually say it because the majority of players, even if it
Oh,
looked
that
like the
wrecks
most
my head.
obvious cross in the world, they'll always be like, oh, yeah, I totally meant
No, I hate that. I hate it. You didn't mean it. Like, come on. No,
that.
I enjoy that she owned that, but look, that got them back to 2-1. The game should have been wrapped up. Šemek had just made a save to stop Brighton going 3-0 up. That definitely would have been game over. And Ndozi just she just her positioning was wrong. And then I don't know if it was the confidence thing, but when she came out for the second goal, obviously it was the right decision to come out and clear her lines, but she didn't kick through the ball. That needed to be in row Z. It was kind of just a half clearance and it hit off Martinez, who, was a really, really tidy finish. And then at 2-2, West Ham, having probably been the better team for all of the game, were in the ascendancy. Their backs were up and Essay got kind of an opportunist goal at the end to make it 3-2. But like you say, it was a fun game, but yeah. Brighton probably, and the same for London City this week. Last week, London City probably didn't deserve to win, did, and Brighton played really well. Whereas in this game, Brighton didn't play well, go 2-0 up and lost. So, yeah, it's mad old place, football.
They're gonna say it's a mad old game there. One of the other mad decisions of the last couple of days, I think personally, was the decision by Chelsea to extend Sonia Baumgartner's contract to 2030. And before any Chelsea supporters start screaming at their podcast slash YouTube, depending on where you watch and listen, it's not that I think because of the run of form that Chelsea have had this season that she should be fired or they should get rid of her at the end of the season or anything like that. It's that she already had a contract until 2028. So she still had another 2 years. What's the point in extending it for 4 years to 2030 when, yes, don't think she should go after the season, but there is still stuff to prove there on her side.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. You're so right. Like you say, I really rate her as a manager. I think she's quality. I think Chelsea will be back in the title race next year. But yeah, it seems like they jumped. Yeah, it just seems like they're jumping the gun, that there's other things that need to be sorted out. I think priority maybe is a couple of reinforcements next year again. I think at times defensively they've looked a little bit vulnerable. Maybe it's Girma and Bright getting used to each other, but that hasn't been a perfect pairing yet, so maybe that's going to take time, or maybe they do need to go in a different direction there. We'll see. They've loads and loads of talent, but yeah, it's getting the blend right and maybe a couple of reinforcements. I think I would have been concentrating more on Looking who's coming out of contract, where can we make the best deals and stuff like that on the pitch, because like you said, they're already settled off the pitch. It's like this is a next year job.
Yeah, it just, and also originally when I saw it, I thought maybe they're doing this to settle things a little bit because there was a bit of discontent amongst the fans and just say, like, you know, we 100% support her, which while I don't understand that completely, it is at least some sort of reasoning as to what they're trying to do, or I don't agree with it totally. But then I read in The Guardian had a bit of sourced information, I think it was Tom Gary again, who was saying that it had been agreed before the Arsenal and City games. So like this is something that's kind of been in the works for a while. It didn't come, you know, it wasn't a 5-1 loss and all of a sudden Chelsea were saying, okay, fans are at our backs, we really, really need to back this manager. You know, it's also unusual in the women's games. You don't really get for like this is essentially now a 4-year
Yeah,
contract.
maybe this is just, it must just be some sort of strategy that we don't know about, like that there's a long-term plan here, like a 4-year vision kind of a thing. And here's the investment that we have for this time period. We'll box off the manager and their wages. We'll give them scope to do X, Y, and Z over this period. It must be a director of football influence kind of, let's, yeah, some sort of
Wouldn't
strategy
be like
plan,
Chelsea to be
because
given 10-year contracts to anyone.
no, yeah, I don't know, it's interesting. And maybe again we're just surprised because of the timing of it and Chelsea not being the champions this year, but we are looking for there to be kind of more a long-term contract so that
Yeah.
there's more stability within it. It's just, yeah, it's unusual. But again, is it a statement from Chelsea being like we're still the driving force in terms of the standard setting in the league?
Yeah, I think if it happened at this time next year, and it was like, oh, she's coming into the final year of her contract, she gets an extension or whatever, it would kind of make more sense in my
Yeah.
head than now. The sporting directors, Lawrence Stewart and Paul Winstanley, were both the ones that kind of gave a statement in her announcement that came from the club. And they said, since the day Sonia joined Chelsea, she has delivered a level of excellence that has elevated our women's team on and off the pitch. Her impact has been immediate and significant, and the standards she sets embody exactly what we want this club to represent. Sonia is not only a key part of driving our success today, but also an integral part of the long-term future we are building. Renewing her contract reflects our belief in her leadership, her vision, and the stability she brings to the club. That's
I think that's
basically
a pretty
everything.
strong statement, and it's a fairly like glowing reflection for a manager. It sounds like she really is involved in the thick of things in terms of planning and where she wants to bring this to. And I think that can be impressive, that she's not just concentrating on what happens on the pitch.
But she
So,
did have an incredible first season, and I
yeah.
think anyone who has watched Chelsea over the last couple of seasons could see that Emma Hayes legacy team was coming to a bit of a crossroads and there was going to be an eventual dip. So maybe that's just what this season is. And, you know, she has another season or so to kind of bed in the team that she wants, how she wants them to play. And all of a sudden we see them go right back up to where they used to be. I mean, they're certainly not a club afraid to make big moves when it comes to transfers or when it comes to statement money in the game. So we shall wait and see. Maybe we will be eating our words in a couple of years' time when she's going up onto like a decade of
Yeah.
Chelsea management has led them to multiple more titles, more back-to-back trophies than before. But for the weekend, it was a comprehensive run-of-the-mill 2-0 win against Spurs. I don't know, can something be comprehensive and run-of-the-mill? Potentially not. But
When
a
it's
two.
Chelsea, yeah.
Yeah, that's
Just
fair.
because, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so a.
this, it was one of those games again, Chelsea didn't have to be at their best, I don't think. Spurs started really well and they had a good start, and Chelsea were a little bit lethargic. They needed to be kind of booted into life a little bit, and it came just from mistakes from Spurs. And they still have that thing where even when they're not at their best, they punish you. White run footed herself and gave a corner away, and then resulting from that, Walsh got the goal up. And that's the thing with Chelsea. If you're playing really well and you're not the one to score first, it's so difficult to come back. And then I think Ho said it after, to concede so early into the second half when you've obviously given a rallying speech at half time, it really kind of deflates the whole thing. So it was just lots to say Spurs really contributed to the game. But Chelsea just, they had more.
Yeah, what do you think is going wrong for Spurs at this part of the season? It happens a lot, but it did, under Martin Ho, it did feel like things were changing, that there was, yes, setbacks at certain points in the first half of the season, but they were kind of tackled. Or you could see the work being put in the weeks after to change some of those things, but it feels a little bit like the old Spurs is creeping back in again.
A little bit. I think that yeah, they have that kind of new energy that Ho has brought to them. He's driving standards, and he's asking a lot of his players, and they've delivered to a point, but because the squad is still quite small, at some point it's still the same people getting picked every week. It's still the same people. So firstly, they're not getting really challenged for their starting place. And then secondly, maybe they are starting to fatigue a little bit because they've put so much on into the start of the season, and they've just started to plateau a bit because they were really on the rise and improving all the time. And I think it's not that they're going backwards, but they've definitely plateaued in terms of they can't get consistency now. Because like that, they started really, really well, but they didn't have the resilience or the resolve to think when they went down to Chelsea that they would come back against at Chelsea. So they're not there yet. They're not mentally there, and I don't think physically and depth wise, they're not there.
Speaking of the kind of conversation we had earlier about Kenny McCabe and big players leaving teams, Millie Bright's contract is up this summer with Chelsea, and obviously the Chelsea fan base, it feels, over recent weeks are really starting to turn against her a little bit. There's a lot of, not my captain, not my leader. Obviously, this all started a little bit earlier in the year when she was on her podcast with Rachel Daly, and it was around the time the Mary Earps book came out, and she refused to defend Hannah Hampton in an adequate way, according to the Chelsea fan base. And then it came to a head again in a big way after the City game, because she was interviewed after the game and she complimented the Chelsea side, but kind of did her side a little bit dirty again and not going to bat for them in the way that you would probably expect a leader like that to do. Do you think this is potentially pointing towards maybe an exit for her during the summer?
Yeah, I think so. Just because, again, standards, Chelsea, age, it's all a thing. I think that Chelsea would also like to give her the send off that she deserves as a club captain and a legend of the club and has won everything with them. I think for everyone involved, it would be a good idea for her to move on and experience. I think NWSL would be perfect for her. I also don't think that, and I know, like, I did a podcast on the WSL when I was playing, but I don't think that active current players should have podcasts that speak about the league and their teams and stuff like that. There's too much freedom on a podcast is to. Like if things are directed within a club and it's a club produced podcast, they can edit that in a way that protects the players. But if you're doing this off your own bat, obviously it's not in players' contracts to stop them doing that. And I get that women's players want to make money on the side and they want to promote themselves, and that's really important because they don't earn the same wages. But I think that it's you don't see the men's side doing it, and there's a reason for it. You know what I mean? You could tie yourself up with this stuff, and have her having had, she pulled out of a major tournament. She's had injuries. She's had to take time off. It speaks to a distraction, and it speaks maybe to just a lack. Yeah, I just don't like it. I don't think it's. I think you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position, and you don't need that when you're coming back from injury, and there's already kind of looking at your future, looking at your age, your place within the squad and the team should be your number one priority.
It's definitely, even if you look at the last year, year and a half, when it's exploded, I think a bit more for female footballers to have their own podcast. You've definitely noticed more and more issues coming up with it in terms of them saying things that they potentially shouldn't. Now, as an outsider, it can make for great content and
100%,
it's
and I hate
interesting
when,
to listen to, but I can imagine if you're in a squad, you must be so frustrated by it.
yeah, look, I hate how bland footballer interviews are. Like, they're so generic, and like, you could predict what people are going to say after matches and stuff like that. And if you want to have a podcast, I think fine, but it shouldn't be on the thing that you that is your active place of work. You know, and if it is, it should be under the guidance or final say should be run through your place of work. I it's a strange phenomenon that I don't think I am behind.
I know, I don't think, I hate to say this, but I also don't think it's going anywhere unless people go fully down the social
It's gonna
media
get
route.
saturated as well then.
Yeah.
Like,
Well, I think it's already heading that way a little
yeah.
bit.
Strange. I
Personally, I
find
think
it
the best
strange.
podcast started about 4 years ago and feature, footballers and also people who have never played football in any sort of professional or semi-professional
Exactly.
quality.
I have no context to what the WSL is like, but I will put my opinion forward with blind belief in
That's
myself.
what we're all about on this
Yes.
podcast. Last but not least, I very nearly forgot this match because there was so much happening. But Manchester United getting a 2-0 win over Leicester, which keeps them up there in the Champions League places, also is bad news for Leicester when it comes to the relegation battle as it sees them rooted to the bottom. But there's more and more happy notes coming out of the Manchester United camp, especially after some of the January signings are starting to find their feet.
Yeah, again, Ziggy Yottia on the score sheet, but really it was Schuller's run that made that first goal, kind of blindsided the keeper. Sandberg had chances, like the two fullbacks, I think they're adding a lot. So yeah, I think that the what the signings have done is they've allowed Man United to be a bit braver. So we said it a couple of weeks ago, and I'll say it again, is they're when they feel like they need to bring on the subs now, they're doing it. They have subs come off the bench, so they were able to bring Rolfo and Riviere on quite early in the second half before the 68th minute, and then less than 10 minutes later brought on Turland and Ouyo, and Turland ended up on the score sheet with a really, really great goal. So really clever signings, I would say, in terms of helping United to, ignite a spark within a game. Sometimes you could say they kind of, when they weren't at their best, they kind of stayed that way throughout a game. They found it hard to turn the tide of a game. Whereas I think that these options now are there to allow them to at least try to do that and make those subs. So, that's really positive, but also should be, it should have been happening before.
Yeah.
Why is it taking this long for them to realize that the transfer market is where United need to be very, very active in order to bridge the gap, because there's only so much the players can do, and they're showing that they're doing it. They are improving all the time. Now they still can do better. They still need to score more goals with the chances that they create, and maybe there is still a marquee signing that they need to make. But I think Schuller, given time, it's nice that she has half a season to bed in, and then I'd imagine she'll hit the ground running next year. Leicester, again, they're so good at staying in games. They're so good at, like, they're quite good to watch. They're good on the counter. O'Brien is really good. They were hard done by a little bit with some of the decisions in this game, and when things aren't going for you, they're really not going for you. But their lack of goals is really what has them where they are, because they do tend to cling on in games and create some chances and put themselves in a position to fight for points and not quite get over the line. because of the lack of firepower. So yeah, it's very worrying times for Leicester because they're the only team you kind of say they've put in good performances and not gotten points out of it. You know, Liverpool and West Ham's performances when they weren't getting points were poor performances. You know, they actually didn't deserve the points, and they've turned a tide on that. The performances are leading to points, whereas the performances aren't translating for Leicester.
And also other times that we've seen Leicester keep themselves up when they've been in this relegation battle, they've made quite smart moves in the January transfer window, and that hasn't happened for
Time
them
has
this
passed,
season.
yeah.
Yeah, but
Like
as we say,
Williams did look a threat in the air. I have to say, she
yeah.
was there. So they need to, and obviously Lehman, she's got pace. They're their two new signings, and I do think they're going to need to lean on both of them if they're going to start converting anything. Get Lehman on the ball, get crosses into the box, and hope that Williams can get on the end of it. And I know that's kind of rudimentary in its route one, but they have to do whatever they can to try and get on a score sheet and drag them. Drag other people into the battle with them again. That, like you say, those that fact that they're all paying each other down the bottom is really, really interesting going forward.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be, I think, the most interesting part of the next couple of weeks to see who it is on the final day. I actually have booked to go to Arsenal Liverpool on the final day of the season with
Nice.
former friends of the pod, Emma Carroll and Catherine Murphy, for the potential of Kenny McCabe's last ever Arsenal game, but also who knows?
Who knows? Who
Who
knows?
knows? Karen, thank you very much as always. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all again very, very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.